Support for this episode of the podcast comes from our patrons at Patreon. Go to patreon.com/chasingearhart to join the chase and become a patron today. On the morning of July 2nd, 1937, Amelia Earhart and her navigator Fred Noonan disappeared over the Pacific Ocean without a trace. 81 years later, all over the world lie scattered pieces of their puzzle, waiting to be put together. Welcome to Season 2 of the Chasing Earhart Podcast.
What's the rumpus, Ace?
Look, lady, could you get out of the way?
Lady? Who are you calling lady? The name is Amelia. Amelia Earhart, perhaps you've heard of me?
Oh, right, you're like this famous pilot, or whatever.
Pilot? I was the first woman to fly the Atlantic. First woman to receive the Flying Cross. First woman to fly across the 48 states in a gyroprop. And now if you'd wipe that perhaps permanent look of alarm off your kisser, I was wondering if you might be so kind as to tell me exactly where I am.
You're in a museum, or actually under it. And I'm in kind of a dangerous situation right now, so you might not want to be anywhere near me. Wow, you're fast.
What's your name, Flyboy?
My name is Larry Daly.
Well, Larry Daly, in case you weren't listening, I'm not one to shy away from danger.
How about Spears? You want to shy away from Spears?
Let's ankle, Skipper. Now we're gonna have some fun.
Perhaps no other institution on the planet is more recognizable than the Smithsonian. The Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. houses some of the most iconic aviation exhibits on the planet, and the museum staff are some of the most knowledgeable experts that can be found. One of the most well-known exhibits there is Amelia Earhart's Lockheed Vega. The plane that she set the transatlantic record in now stands proudly in the Baron Hilton Pioneers of Flight Gallery. Could it be possible that one day, Amelia's Lockheed Electra, the holy grail of aviation, may find its way into the same gallery? Tonight, Season 2 continues with the 72nd episode of the Chasing Earhart podcast. We're joined by project guests Dorothy Cochran and Tom Crouch of Air and Space to discuss the ongoing role that the Smithsonian plays in the investigation of the disappearance, Amelia Earhart's impact and legacy, and why they believe that Amelia Earhart stood for much more than flying for the fun of it. Well, tonight is a very special night for Chasing Earhart as I welcome not one, but two of the guests from my original 25 list that was created over a decade ago. You know, it's funny. I remember when we first started this project so long ago, people would actually tell me this project wouldn't be official until you include the Smithsonian and two very specific people from the Smithsonian. And tonight, after 70 plus episodes of our show and countless hours of documentary footage shot, I guess we're finally official. Joining me from the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum are curators Dorothy Cochran and Tom Crouch. This is truly special. Thank you both, and welcome to Chasing Earhart.
Thanks for having us.
So before we get started tonight, let's do a little housekeeping for those that may not be familiar with your work. Can we start by asking you both to give us a little information on your education, your professional background? And Dorothy, we'll begin with you tonight.
I am a curator, of course, in the Aeronautics Department. I'm responsible for general aviation, women in aviation, and some aerial photography. And I came to the Smithsonian just looking for a job in D.C., but my background is actually in history and education. So that's why I thought the Smithsonian would be a good fit. And I was just very fortunate to be able to get employment here in the early years and learn about aviation as I moved along.
And Tom, how about you, sir?
I'm senior curator of aviation at the National Air and Space Museum. I've been at the Smithsonian for 45 years. Seems like yesterday. But I have a doctorate in history and an honorary doctorate, too. And, you know, I've spent most of my career writing and speaking and so on, mostly about the early history of flight technology.
Now, Tom, I always like to ask this next question of every project guest that sits in on our show. And the question is, do you have any early recollections of Amelia Earhart? Can you recall when she first came into your life?
Well, I mean, I've been a fanatical student of the history of flight since I was a little kid. So I really can't remember a time when I didn't know about Amelia. But I think it was the publication of Fred Garner's book, Searching for Amelia Earhart, when I was in college, in fact, that really sparked my interest in a serious way in the search. And actually, I think that book sort of launched the modern era of interest in Earhart's fate.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you. That's definitely an iconic book. Now, Dorothy, how about you? When was the first time you heard the name Amelia Earhart? Do you remember?
I don't remember exactly, but I know that she was discussed in history books, you know, when I was in school. And I don't have a remembrance of her beyond knowing that there was a woman who did try to fly around the world. You know, this was different. This was exciting. But unfortunately, she was lost. And it really wasn't until I got to the museum here that then I became involved in really learning more about her and understanding everything that was going on and beginning to listen to all the theories and that sort of thing.
Okay, so now that we've established a little background, let's dive right into the reason that we're all here. We're in the 81st year of the disappearance of Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan, and this topic seems to be hotter than it's ever been. And I wonder if you can each talk a little about what this case in particular has done for the Smithsonian and what it means to you personally. And Dorothy, we'll begin with you.
Well, as far as the Smithsonian, of course, we have her Lockheed Vega, in which she made the first nonstop flight across the Atlantic Ocean as a woman, and only the second person to do a nonstop flight across the Atlantic Ocean. So having that aircraft makes us, you know, we're certainly invested in her and her information, her work, and it's our responsibility to bring that then forth to the public and talk about, you know, what was the flight about? Why is it important? Who was she as a person? And then as years go on, you know, it's not just the flight, but it's about a woman. It's about encouraging people to be in aviation. It's about the era. You know, we have the artifacts, and we are happy to have them, and we feel a responsibility to make sure that then we share what we learn and know about her with the public.
And Tom, how about you, sir? What's this been like for you?
Well, I mean, the Smithsonian, as Dorothy said, is one of the central sources of information on the history of aviation in the country and I guess in the world. So it's only natural that people would come to us with questions about Amelia Earhart, especially since, as Dorothy pointed out, we have such a great collection of Earhart materials, the airplane, flight suits, different sorts of honors and awards, and that kind of thing. So we're sort of a natural place for people to come who have questions about Amelia Earhart and what happened to her.
Now, when a case like this has so many hypotheses, of course, that you both know that have been feverishly and diligently worked for so long. You mentioned Fred Garner earlier. And that can certainly play into what has become known around here as the legacy of the disappearance. And Tom, I want to ask you, do you think that the idea of not knowing supports the public's fascination with the end of Amelia and Fred's story?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, in her own time, Amelia Earhart was certainly one of the best known, not just women, but really Americans of that era. If you think back on the 20th century about famous figures, women especially, well, I guess movie stars come to mind, but in terms of really serious people who had a genuine impact on their time, you know, you think of Eleanor Roosevelt and you think of Amelia Earhart, because Amelia really did have an impact on her world in terms of encouraging young women to take chances and chase their dreams and all of that kind of thing. I've always argued that Amelia's disappearance, while certainly unfortunate for her, was an important element in keeping a really important, fascinating, and inspirational story alive. Because the mystery is there, people have maintained their interest in the fascinating human being that Amelia Earhart was.
Now, Dorothy, you wrote a really wonderful article that was posted shortly before the 80th anniversary of the disappearance, and the article is titled Amelia Earhart Missing for 80 Years But Not Forgotten, and of course, we'll have a link to that in the show notes for tonight's episode, but in it, you wrote a quote that appeared in a note that Amelia wrote to her sister Muriel before the 1928 transatlantic flight, the first one with Bill Stoltz and Slim Gordon, and the quote goes like this, quote, "I have tried to play for a large stake, and if I succeed, all will be well. If I don't, I shall be happy to pop off in the midst of such an adventure." And when I read that quote, to me, that sounds like a quote from someone that really doesn't have an inkling of fear. And so I'll ask you flat out, was Amelia Earhart fearless in your eyes?
Yes, I think she was. She was so enamored with aviation. She was so interested in creating this career for herself, pushing aviation. I mean, she understood that there were challenges. She understood that she might not be able to succeed at everything, but she accepted that and she didn't let it bother her. She just moved on and you know, did what she could to make the flights. She sought out people that would help her make a flight, you know, make it safely. Certainly in the early years, she was surrounded by people who were helping her with the flights, people like Bert Balkin and that sort of thing. So she just said, you know, let's do it. Let's go when we can go. We wait for weather, then we'll go, whatever it is. But she accepted the risks and then just moved on beyond them and said, you know, this is what I want to do. And I'm passionate about it and it's worth it to me. And if something goes wrong, well, at least I tried.
Now, Tom, Amelia was so many things. She was an aviator, a promoter. She was an advocate for women. My question is, do you think there was a single factor about her that made her sort of this magnet for the fame and the recognition that that she received then and continues to receive today?
Well, you know, when you think about her period, the period between the two world wars, aviators suddenly became great public heroes, with Charles Lindbergh, of course, at the top of the pyramid. But Amelia Earhart was right up there, too. I think people recognize that, yeah, there were sports heroes and there were movie stars, but I mean, sports heroes were playing a game and movie stars were living out up on the silver screen, something other than reality. Whereas aviators were out there in the real world doing really extraordinary things that would advance aviation and promote the welfare of the human race. And of all of those aviators who were so famous, I think Amelia attracted people because obviously she had goals above and beyond aviation. I think for her, for Amelia, aviation was a way in which she could position herself to have a genuine impact. And of course, in her case, one of the primary things she was interested in was promoting possibilities for women, promoting careers for women, demonstrating especially to young women that it was important to have a dream and to chase it. And I mean, that was really an especially attractive quality, I think, that caught people's imagination, continues to do it today. I mean, Amelia Earhart today is still sort of a name to conjure with. And I think it's because of that persona that she established back then.
Dorothy, we recently had Linda Finch on the show, and she made a very interesting comment that went like this. She said, Amelia didn't fly and do these things to say, look what I can do. She did it to say, look what you can do. What do you think of that? Just how important was it to Amelia to lead by example and to be a showcase for others to follow her?
Oh, I think it was very important. I mean, it was her desire to have a career. She fell in love with aviation. She saw it as what she could do in life, and she wanted to do this. But she also recognized that it was something different and that it would also resonate with other people. And so she could promote aviation because aviation was worth promoting, but she could also help women consider other ideas, other careers, getting education. And she knew that because she was interested in doing that. And she knew that there had to be other women out there who were interested as well. And if she was going to be able to do this, she wanted to bring other women along with her.
As you were talking, I just thought of this question when you mentioned she wanted to bring other women along with her. Obviously, she established the 99s, and she was a big, you know, advocate of women empowerment, and not only in aviation, but just in general. But how do you think she would feel about the status of women in aviation today? You have people like Shasta Ways, who just flew around the world in 2017. You have the STEM movement going on, which a lot of people consider her to be a pioneer of before STEM was even a thing. But how do you think she would feel, just speculation-wise, about the place of women in aviation, just women in general?
She would obviously be delighted. I mean, this is what she worked for. She wanted women to be able to go into aviation if they wanted to. If you don't, do something else, you know, get your education, get a career, do something else. But she wanted them to have the equal opportunities in aviation and in life. There's no doubt about that.
Now, the next question is for the both of you. You have each been out front of this case for a very long time, appearing in radio, television, and in print constantly. With every new piece of information that releases on a particular hypothesis or just in general, do you have to, I guess, getting inside your mindset for this, do you have to gear up for that round of publicity? Like when the Jaluit Dock photo drops, you know, in 2017, and then just all these, the Nicomoro bones, and just all these things that come out and just kind of set the world on fire, so to speak. Do you have to gear up for that round of publicity because you sort of know that it always falls to the two of you to kind of speak for the Smithsonian? And we'll start with Dorothy on that.
Absolutely, yeah. Every time one of these new, well, not new theories, but every time another statement comes out and someone's looking for publicity or whatever their reason for it is, then we know that the phones are going to call, start ringing, that the media is going to come calling, and depending on what theory it is, you know, we know how to deal with it. But in general, obviously, our interest is to make sure that people know the facts. And if the theory is not based on facts, we're going to tell people that. But yeah, we're always aware that here comes another round, no doubt about it.
Yeah, you really not only have to know Amelia's story and the facts of the case and so on, but you really have to stay up to speed on the various theories too. When somebody comes up with what they regard as a new piece of evidence, you know, you have to be close enough to the cutting edge to be able to make a sort of judgment as to how reasonable or unreasonable this is. And we aren't the only ones. When the photograph appeared a few years ago that purported to show Amelia and Fred on a dock, supposedly captured by the Japanese, you know, you just stand back for a little bit, and sure enough, somebody comes forward having actually identified the photograph as having been taken many years before, a different situation, and so on. So it's kind of fun to keep close to what all the theories are and make judgments based on, you know, your understanding of the facts.
Yeah, and we've spoken a lot with guests about this next question, and this is something I really wanted to ask you both for some time. Now, regardless of who's correct and where the plane's ultimately found, what role would you both personally like to see the Smithsonian play in the recovery and or the permanent display of Amelia's Lockheed Electra Tinny?
Well, there are people who are searching for her out there, obviously, and some people are doing nautical searches. They're out in boats and things. If they really think that they have found her, I'd love to be on that boat and on that ship. I'd like to go with them. So, and then beyond that, you know, it just depends on, you know, obviously we would want to help corroborate everything to make sure it is actually her aircraft that they are finding, that sort of thing. And then the Smithsonian could possibly play a role, you know, depending on who finds it and what their intent is. We would certainly want to be, you know, a player in some way and help, you know, with finally putting to rest and solving the mystery.
Yeah, that's, I mean, Tom, what do you think about that? I mean, do you agree with that? Do you think the Smithsonian would be very, it's kind of a no-brainer, but I'm sure they'd be very interested in getting involved if this was positively identified as her plane?
I mean, the search is exciting. The question of whether or not you can solve the mystery really is exciting. My wife and I just moved into a new house, and we were throwing a lot of stuff out. One thing I certainly didn't throw out is a tiny little styrofoam coffee cup. It's only about an inch high, but originally it was a full-size coffee cup. It's one of the things that one of the Earhart searchers had a way to send it down 18,000 feet to the bottom of the Pacific where they were searching for Amelia. And you expose it to the pressure down there and it forces all of the air out and you're left with this little thing like a thimble. To be part of discovering the airplane, to actually be there, would be really cool.
I've got my little cup too.
Yeah, I remember that search. Yeah, I remember when they were doing that. That's really awesome. And it's funny, Dorothy, you were talking about being there. I can only imagine, and I guess this is kind of an interesting question to ask, but you know, what that would feel like to be on the boat and to see them raise that plane out of the water initially at the same time, because you have 81 years of all of this research and all of these theories and all of this arguing, really, when you get right down to it, over who's right and what happened. And if this plane is pulled out of the water or found on an island or something and you're able to see it for the first time, that must be that I can't even have words to how that would probably feel to see that, because the mystery is over at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I would liken it to, you know, when the folks in NASA are watching the different launches or landings. I mean, you know, it is the greatest mystery of the 20th century and now the 21st. So it would be awesome to be a part of that. Absolutely.
And that's a great segue into the next question I have for you, Tom, and I think I might know the answer, but we have so many well-known aviation mysteries out there today that are being researched. But is Amelia Earhart's Lockheed Electra the holy grail of aviation in your eyes?
Well, that's a tough one. Certainly, it's way up toward the top of the list. If you're asking, is that the most famous airplane that's missing and would be neat to find? Yeah, I think that's probably the case. Obviously, there are other aviation mysteries that are interesting too, but Amelia's disappearance has fascinated people for so long, given birth to one theory after another. I'm on the fence on this one. I actually used to argue that maybe it would be better not to find the airplane because the mystery has kept the story, the mystique, the fascination with this really wonderful human being alive for all these years. It would be neat to have the airplane.
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, to ask really, and I'll ask that of you both, actually, the mystery of the disappearance kind of has its own legacy now. It's really interesting. But I want to ask you this. If we take away the mystery, if she never disappeared or she just died of old age or something like that, are we having a different conversation right now as far as her legacy and everything? Or does the mystery play that much into her legacy? Dorothy, do you have an answer for that?
I think it does. I mean, obviously, you know, when someone goes missing like that and it just continues like this and grows, it keeps it in the headlines, as you mentioned earlier. You know, when someone comes up with a new theory, here we go again. But, you know, that's gotten her name and out there and everybody knows it and remembers it. Had she not disappeared, you know, we don't know what she would have accomplished when she came back. Would she have, you know, really gotten involved in some major way in aviation and made it an even larger name for herself? I hope so, or in the country. But she still would be remembered for making, if she'd made it around the world flight, yeah. That would have been absolutely wonderful, impressive, and people would still remember her for the Atlantic flight and her Pacific flights, and then accomplishing this around the world flight, which was tremendously difficult. And I think people tend to underestimate how difficult that flight was.
Obviously, most people, I think, remember the name Charles Lindbergh as one of the great names coming out of the 20th century. And I think Amelia would have been one of those names that we would have remembered from the 20th century in any case. But the mystery, the mystique, the question of what did happen to her and so on has certainly played a role in keeping Amelia's legend and fame and that kind of thing alive.
And I only have one final question before we wrap up tonight, and that is about impact and legacy. If Chasing Earhart's about anything, it's about that. So I will ask you both to give us your thoughts on what Amelia's impact has been on aviation, on women, and the idea that you truly can have, do, or be anything you want. I'll ask you to give us your thoughts on what her legacy is in 2018. And Dorothy, let's wrap up with you.
Well, Amelia Earhart, I think, embodies some of the excitement of what we used to call the golden age of flight. She's, you know, this is when aviation is coming of age. It's really become beyond the experimental stage. We're going into building airlines, things like that. And she's a part of this group of people from that era who really did push the boundaries. And that's why her the gallery that her aircraft is in is called Pioneers of Flight. So she's always a part of that brilliant era. And then with her interest and genuine hope for the advancement of women, she's got a legacy there as well as being someone who really was is interested in moving women beyond where they were in life in that era and moving in them, be one of the early, she didn't call herself a feminist, but being one of the early women to really be an example, lead by example, and then have this legacy that continues on so that everyone knows who she is, knows where she stood, and that her thoughts and her writing and her career actually made a difference.
I certainly agree. If you think about women in the 20th century, Amelia is one of those names that immediately pops out at you. And if you think about her larger impact, women voted for the first time nationally in the 1920 election. So the goal that women had fought for over the century before to get the vote, they had the vote. And Amelia represents sort of the next stage in terms of goals for women. Okay, we're part of the political process now, but let's look beyond that. Women are capable of doing about anything a man can do and doing it just as well. And that was Amelia's message for the next stage of things. Have a dream and chase it. Don't give up. Don't let sexism, don't let anything of that sort stand in the way of your dream. Go for it. I think that's the most important thing that we can remember about Amelia Earhart, that vision for the role of women in the larger society.
Well, what can I say? We have been working on setting up this interview for quite some time now, and tonight it's finally done. Tom and Dorothy, I know your schedules are quite hectic, so I want to thank you both for spending a little time with me tonight to discuss Amelia Earhart. It's been a genuine pleasure.
Oh, our pleasure. Thank you for asking us.
You bet. It's been fun. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Chasing Earhart podcast, part of our Legacy Retrospective Series. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Come back to ChasingEarhart.com each week for another new podcast. While at ChasingEarhart.com, visit our archives and our blog to hear all of our past episodes and interviews with guests such as Brad Meltzer, Tom Vinson, Candace Fleming, Jessica Cox, Abigail Harrison, and Shasta Ways. You can also hear interviews with representatives of all of the relevant hypotheses regarding the disappearance of Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan, such as Tom King, Dick Spink, Gary LaPook, Rick Gillespie, Andy Sherrill, and more. Also at our site, you can find hundreds more posts, project updates, and much more information regarding the life and disappearance of Amelia Earhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a show without any sponsors or ads. We rely on support from listeners like you to keep the Chasing Earhart project operating. You can donate to the show, and as our thank you, receive bonus podcasts, merchandise, and advanced opportunities for Chasing Earhart events. Find a full list of available shows and rewards at patreon.com/chasingearhart. You can also follow the project on social media, where our team posts all of our shows, news, and project information. And that hashtag is @ChasingEarhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by Tom Myers. Podcast music is provided by Dane Jarris Schmidt, and narration is done by Forrest Burgess. The opinions on Chasing Earhart are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Chris Evan Films, Incorporated. Chris Evan Films, Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All movie clips and audio used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of historical education, and no infringement is intended. The Chasing Earhart podcast is an exclusive trademark of Chris Evan Films, Incorporated, and may not be used without the express written consent of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a Chris Evan Films production. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.